Today's episode of The Walking Dead Feedback Show is sponsored by TrueCar. Now, when you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory on the car that you want. Say you've got a lot of cargo, say cantaloupes you need to be hauling around, but you need to make sure that you're getting the best price when you're looking for that used car. People configure cars online only later to find out that they're not even available. But with TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory, not pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing offered by the actual dealer, and not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. It's a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price to help you easily find the car that you want. TrueCar has sold over 3 million cars at over 13,000 dealers, with the average user saving over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. The Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 13 is still over, but we're just getting started answering your feedback questions here on our Walking Dead Feedback Show. And now, here are the two guys who have Bury Me Here signs outside of their podcast recording rooms. I'm Rob Cisternino. Here is Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well. The only Bury Me Here that I know is the Bury Me Here I painted on a sign that I occasionally wear around my neck asking people to throw berries into my mouth. Just like, it's like, hey, I could use some berries. Bury me right here. This is where I want it to go.
Right here. Did you like the tweet I sent you asking if Sir Richard was making a spy bunker?
Yes, I love that. I could just imagine Sir Richard like getting in the dirt and just like kicking his way into the grave. Oh, it'd be fantastic.
Yes.
Do you think Sir Richard speaks llama?
Yes. Do you think that Sir Richard was just going to put himself into that hole and then cover himself up so that he could hear any of the plan between Morgan and Ezekiel?
Morgan. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that sounds right to me.
Would have been good.
Yeah.
All right, Josh. So here we are to answer our feedback questions here for The Walking Dead. Only 3 hours of Walking Dead left here in Season 7, Episode 14, 15, and 16. Of course, Episode 14 coming up this Sunday night. So here we are where the end of the season is on the horizon. So, of course, obviously a good place to talk through some of the things going on in The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I kind of feel like, I mean, even though we've accused The Walking Dead of being sluggish this season, in some ways it feels like it's flown by. Am I alone on that?
The weeks have gone by pretty quick.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if we had like a huge like tectonic shift in what's going on in the world of The Walking Dead.
No, of course not. No.
But it's not such a depressing slog like it was in the first half of the season.
Yeah, I don't think like it's a complete 180, but I do think that the energy has picked up. And I think that's a great thing. But yeah, only three more episodes to go. The promise of war still on the horizon. I feel like if you were a betting person and this was based on, you know, the history of The Walking Dead, they would be smart to bet that war doesn't break out until the end at this point, as we're kind of looking backwards in Walking Dead history and forward at what might be to come. Do you think that that's too much of a stretch to say?
No, I definitely could see that being the direction that we go in heading into the new season. I think that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of classic Walking Dead. So the question will just be like, what does happen in these next 3 hours? What needs to happen still in these next 3 hours? I think that's something that will pretty quickly materialize, I believe.
So we have your questions that come into us either on the post-show recaps post of the previous episode via email twd@postshowrecaps.com or via voicemail postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. Josh, I did have a chance to check out The Talking Dead this morning.
Well, Alex Kidwell, you know, the third talking head we've got here when we're talking about Walking Dead live on Sunday nights. Alex had already been watching some of The Talking Dead, and he said it was two thumbs up so far. Do you agree with Alex's take?
Yeah, I think it was one of the better ones. Yeah, Alex did watch the episode here with me, and we had a babysitting issue just to go outside of the podcast for a second.
You and Alex had a babysitting issue, yes.
My my wife was working on Sunday night, so there was a babysitter with my kids, and they don't let babysitters put them to bed. So the episode ended.
It's in their, contract, yeah.
Right. I was like King Ezekiel putting everybody to sleep at night, and the baby was screaming, and then my older son will go through a million different things of which Lego he wants.
You
know, not that one.
You were channeling the wrong character. You're supposed to tell, you know, the Carol bedtime stories. That really puts the fear of God into young children.
Yeah, so Alex had a lot of time to watch The Talking Dead on Sunday night. But no, I thought this was a pretty good panel. We had Merle was there.
Merle, yeah, that's so weird that Michael Rooker is like still watching Walking Dead all these years later. Or do you think that this was just the first Walking
Dead? I don't think it's weird at all.
Do you think it was the first... You don't think so? Okay.
I think he's one of the many actors that like makes a living out of going to like these, Walking Dead conferences,
Stalker
like the
Con.
Walker Stalker
yes,
stuff.
Yes.
Right. I think he probably gets an appearance fee for each one of those. So, he's very incentivized to stay on top of everything Walking Dead. So it was Merle. It was Scott Gimple and it was Sir Richard on the couch. And then, as we mentioned, Lenny James was on Skype. But I like the segment with Lenny James on Skype because sometimes I feel like they just run out of stuff to talk about with the people that are on the panel.
Yeah.
And so I like that we had like that segment or two with Lenny James because I felt like it really helped break up the show and added some new stuff to talk about with another important person. So I think that the Talking Dead should consider doing that more of having like, okay, here is, a Jeffrey Dean Morgan via Skype. We don't have him here in the studio, but I think why not? Like, as long as you're not like leading with them and having the George Bluth, like Super Dave Osborne
right.
Version of it where
the surrogate,
right. You don't have that, but I know I thought it was fun to have like the Skype version, especially when it was like an episode about Morgan.
Or you could get the surrogate. Like you could get Super Dave and just have like Jeffrey Dean Morgan speaking through that specific guy.
Yeah, that would be good.
It's really fun to wield Lucille on set.
Yes.
I really like monologuing my way through a scene.
Marty Funkhauser in the house. From the Funkhouse.
Also, that Scott Gimple has been on the show before, and I actually liked him best on this episode of The Talking Dead, because I think that a lot of times that he has come on before, it has been sort of like in defense mode, where like in the last year, he's been on a few times talking about like, no, it was a good idea that we faked out that we killed Glenn. Like, right. Oh no, this cliffhanger was the perfect way to do this. Like this was nice that he was on an episode where he didn't have to come on and try to spin anything.
Yeah, no, I caught a little bit of the episode. I caught like the first 20 minutes or so. And I think, listen, I wasn't as high on this episode as you and Alex were, but I would say it was more hit than miss. I don't think that it stands alongside like Clear, for instance, which is another Scott Gimple episode. But I do think that it's of the episodes this season. I think that there was more good than bad by a lot.
Right.
And I feel like there was certainly material in here for Scott Gimple to be able to come onto the show and be pretty proud of.
And I think that Scott Gimple, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's written all of these Morgan episodes, like you mentioned, Clear. And then the hour and a half cheesemaker flashback episode. I think that
the
was also him.
Yeah, I'll fact check you on that in a hot second.
So he's been sort of the author of this Morgan narrative. So I think that it was good to have somebody there who could not only just speak to the show, but also, speak to what he was writing in the episode.
Yeah, and that's correct. You're right. He's the guy who wrote that episode.
I thought this was a pretty fun show. There was a lot going on. And so the only thing I will say is that Chris Hardwick is really fixated on Jerry from the Kingdom.
How could he not be? How could he not be? Jerry's the best.
He was on The Talking Dead, I think, 2 weeks ago. And in the opening of the show, Chris Hardwick is like, and then we're going to hear from Jerry. We'll have an interview with him. Like, well, we don't need to interview Jerry every week.
What if we get Jerry on Skype? That seems to be your sweet spot.
That's fine. I mean, that if you have somebody good on Skype, bring them in.
How great was it when they had Lenny James on Skype and then his children burst into the room behind him and they had to police the children out of the room?
Yes, I think that happens often with anybody in England who's on Skype.
That's just the rule. That's like a London rule.
That's the rule. Yeah. I have a good clip I want to play for you later of my own version of that that happened last week.
Oh, but, good.
Yeah. But anyway, so good Talking Dead. I feel like that they've like two out of the last 3 weeks, I think, have been pretty good.
All right. Well, I'm glad it was a good Talking Dead. Are you excited for a good feedback show now, Rob?
Rhetorical.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Lots of feedback to get through this week. A lot of people have their own hot takes about everything that happened with Sir Richard and the Saviors and their fixation on cantaloupes and all of that good stuff. Some Carol questions, too. So we'll cover a pretty wide net this week, Rob.
Right.
All right. Let's start with a friend of the podcast. Let's start with our good friend, David Bloomberg, who is not thrilled with the management of the Saviors right now. This from David Bloomberg. How does Negan still have idiots who go rogue, like the guy who was supposed to shoot Richard but shot Benjamin instead? Hasn't he instilled enough fear in his henchmen by now? What's your take on this, Rob? This guy's name apparently is Jared. This is the guy with the long hair who shot Ben and has been antagonizing
Richard.
These
Jareds are always trouble.
You can't trust a Jared. That's just the rule. So what do you think about this? Is it bad that there are Jareds within the Saviors? Should this not exist anymore?
So you think it's a thing that the Saviors are like really have a policy on make sure you don't make an example out of the wrong person? I mean, this seems a little ticky-tack considering their leader. I think that this sort of runs from the top down. Negan is executing people all the time. We saw him throw the doctor of the sanctuary into a pit of fire.
That's right.
Only a couple of weeks ago.
How could we forget?
I don't think that this is something that they're super concerned about, that this is going to be Jared is going to get written up by HR over, you know, you killed the wrong person from the kingdom.
I think that the thing of it is that you can't follow orders. Like, we have a plan. We're going to shoot this guy, Richard. There's been tension here. This kid, Benjamin, isn't harming anybody. If the problem was that there is tension with these meetups between this pack of Saviors and Ezekiel and the knights from the kingdom, then they want to get rid of Richard. That's the problem area. There's no problem with Benjamin. And when Jared just escalates the situation even further, that's got to be an issue. And that feels like the kind of guy that's not somebody who's aligning with Negan, who wants things to be as easy as pie. Like, he'll break out Lucille and bust some heads if he really has to do it. And he'll probably enjoy it as well, but he wants it to have impact. He doesn't want it to cause further problems. He wants it to make things easier.
I disagree.
Easier.
I mean,
really?
Let's go back to the season finale. I mean, we had where Rosita took a shot at Negan, tried to kill him, and for whatever reason, he was like, I like you. Let me kill Olivia.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point.
So this is firmly Savior policy.
But it's like do as I say, not as I do territory as well.
I don't know.
It's like Negan gets away with a move like that. I don't know that Jared gets to do that. Like, what? How much rope does Jared get?
I think it's probably more of an issue with Gavin's leadership. I mean, Gavin seems pretty checked out. Gavin seems like he's just like collecting a cantaloupe paycheck and then going home and playing Atari. He's like, look, I don't want any of this drama. Come on, just give us the cantaloupes. Jared is the one who's like the real like mover and shaker in the Saviors.
Well, what do you think about this? I mean, I hadn't really even considered this, but you may have opened my eyes to a possibility, Rob. Is it possible that Gavin being so down on his job and just like being really checked out, and Jared maybe showing some initiative, could Jared take Gavin's place as the head of this group, and could that be bad news for Gavin?
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty solid trope where it's sort of like the guy who was like the reasonable good cop ends up sort of being ousted by the guy who's sort of like the loose cannon. I could definitely see that being a thing that we see.
Well, we can track that. From Coach Jason, sticking on the topic of Jared, there have been plenty of unlikable characters in 7+ seasons, but has any one of them deserved a vengeful killing as much as the Savior's Jared? I could take a whole 8th season of Negan, but Jared has to go. Soon and brutally. Do Do you feel as strongly about Jared as Coach Jason does, Rob?
No, I don't. I don't have super strong feelings about Jared. He's definitely a douche, but...
Definitely a douche.
He's not somebody who's super high on my bloodlust list.
The thing about that, too, is, like, if someone was going to do, like a vengeful killing on Jared, like, that would have been Sir Richard's job, I feel like.
Yeah, he really was a douche to Sir Richard. I think that one you could give to him, and I think it would be fine.
Well, Morgan might just kill everyone. You know, that might just be where we are with Morgan. So I don't know how much vengeance would be involved so much as just, like, pure instinct.
Yeah, he did take Morgan's staff earlier in the season.
Oh, that's a good point.
Then he was also the person who killed Benjamin. So I think that Morgan is probably going to be on the lookout for him. I mean, especially considering that they made Jared just like have to walk back to the sanctuary by himself. Morgan seems like that he is off on his own. I wouldn't be surprised to have a Morgan-Jared encounter coming up soon.
That would be great. What a great, especially if it was just done as like a scene of just like Morgan, like appearing from out of the woods and just like takes Jared down. That would be fantastic. I would love that.
I could definitely see it. I feel like that the next time we see Morgan, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he's doing.
This is from Adam Bradford, who has a question about the offering that was made to the saviors in terms of the cantaloupes. Adam says, I thought that the scene with the offering to the saviors was pretty odd. How is Gavin not pissed with only a dozen cantaloupes when in episode 10, the kingdom gave substantially more and Gavin was alarmed that the offering was light? That day, they even had watermelons, which, as Alex pointed out, is number one on the melon power rankings. Mm-hmm. That day, they also had an SUV instead of a flatbed truck. So it's very strange that they would use this truck to transport a dozen cantaloupes.
Yeah.
So Adam, I think just echoing a lot of our own confusion with what was going on with this negotiation this week. Not as confusing a negotiation as what tends to go on with the garbage.
Yeah, the whole thing really made no sense. I think that they were just trying to get it down to like a lowest common denominator so we would be able to see that, okay, this is 11 cantaloupes versus 12, but it could just be that they gave them a bunch of stuff. They're always supposed to give 12 cantaloupes. They were one cantaloupe light. I don't think we just needed to, we wouldn't have been too distracted to notice if it was just a missing cantaloupe issue, whether it was a full shipment or just a cantaloupe only shipment.
I think the truck was gratuitous, though.
It really was. I mean,
a gas guzzler, you know?
Right. I mean, you could have probably, you know, taken those cantaloupes there in the sidecar of a motorcycle.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, like that's a job for a bike.
Right. In a basket. You could take a bike with a basket. I mean, especially when they took the truck again to go and then bring just one cantaloupe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And why did Sir Richard need to put the shopping carts? Just to, like, make them late for the saviors, and then that would really, like, piss them off even more before they got there?
It slows them down, and it gives him the opportunity to hide the cantaloupe. Like, he really just needs to buy himself, like, 3 minutes at most.
Oh, that was when he took the cantaloupe off the truck?
Yeah. So he takes the cantaloupe off the truck there. He hides it under the yellow bucket. Morgan goes full clear and freaks out and just randomly kicks a bucket. And it turns out that the bucket he kicks has a cantaloupe underneath.
Got it.
Underneath. Yeah. It's all confusing. It's all, you know, Morgan's got some real...
I just didn't realize that the shopping cart scam was so that he could get a cantaloupe off the truck at that point.
Got it. I want to go back to something you touched on earlier because I think this is great. This is from Spencer Y, who wants to talk about a strategy for how to deal with the saviors. I know you love strategy, Rob, and I know you love the saviors.
Love it.
So strategy for dealing with the saviors. I think you're going to enjoy this. Spencer says, do you guys find it ironic that when a character has a death wish, the saviors don't grant it? Benjamin took the bullet Richard wanted for himself, and earlier in the season, Olivia took the bullet Rosita wanted after her failed assassination attempt on Negan. Heck, in the season premiere, you could technically say Glenn bore the brunt for Daryl's actions against Negan. Therefore, if you want to survive a life-or-death encounter with the saviors, all you have to do is volunteer to die or act in a defiant manner because you will live and someone else will bear the consequence for your actions. What do you think about that, Rob? Is that the move from now on, is to like cause a real problem with Negan if like you're backed into a corner? Be the problem guy because you as the problem guy will not get picked to die?
This is a good observation. I don't think it's foolproof. How about Abraham?
Well, Abraham wasn't really mouthing off. He was just like giving Negan the eyes. Like he was really giving him the eyes.
Right. But he basically was giving to Negan like, hey, pick me. Pick me. Let me. I volunteer as tribute.
Yes.
If you're going to take out anybody from this group, let it be me. And Negan did oblige him on that account.
If you take the Michael Cutlet's exit interview as canon, but do we consider Walking Dead exit interviews to be canon?
probably only slightly more so than on reality shows.
Yeah. So that would be the exception to the rule, though. You know, like for the most part, really, Negan has, as you said before, like it's somebody else who gets killed in place of somebody who maybe more, you know, in the moment deserves it. Somebody who earned that kill a little bit more urgently.
So you think the move is when dealing with the saviors, be like, just kill me already.
Yeah.
But no. Well, now I'm not going to kill you because you want me to
kill
you.
I'm going to kill Steve. Yeah. So I have to kill Steve instead.
Right. So reverse psychology is the way to go with the saviors.
It's good for you. This is a question from Jack Mason. Jack Mason wants to ask our opinion of Carol in this episode. Jack writes, is Carol relapsing again, or do you think that we are done with all of that? In terms of relapsing again, do we think that Carol, Rob, is starting to like go back to her old Sarah Connor type of ways? Is she ready to go to war? That certainly feels to be the case for me.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's weird to call it relapsing. I mean, that I thought what she was going through when she went to live in the house by herself was her relapsing. So I'm not sure whether we're saying relapsing is becoming the more hyper-aggressive Carol or relapsing is going back into a shell Carol.
I think, listen, this goes back, and maybe this is, you know, let's give credit to Walking Dead where it's due. I feel like there has been a pretty cool long game story that's been playing out with Morgan and Carol here. I mean, thinking back to our earliest days of podcasting in season six, like the first half of season six, one of the things you and I were talking about is like the dichotomy between Morgan and Carol, that Carol is somebody who kills because it's necessary, even though it like, you know, costs her bits of her soul to do. And you have Morgan who's been there, who has killed tons of people and can no longer abide that. And so in order to protect his soul and to maintain his sanity, he has sworn off killing under all circumstances. And back then you and I talked about like probably where Walking Dead is going to go with this is some middle ground. You know, there's some sort of gray area between these two opposing views between Carol and Morgan. And these characters were really set up against each other in a lot of scenes in the early going of season six. And season six bared out that Carol and Morgan were going to be on their way to the kingdom for season seven.
I mean, they literally had a fight, I think, in the season six mid-season finale.
That's right. That's right. So I think that they've been doing really interesting stuff with Carol and Morgan from the long view. Like, it's taken a while, and maybe that's frustrating, but I think that some credit is deserved for the fact that they seem to have gotten to this place now, where it seems like Carol, after hearing what's happened at Alexandria, after hearing that Glenn is dead, after hearing that Abraham is dead, after seeing what condition Morgan is in, and this is Morgan, who is all life is precious, now covered in the blood of a guy who was standing in Carol's house not 24 hours earlier, you know, I think that they've both kind of reached new spots on this spectrum. I think that Carol is, you would have to think, the healthier of the two. She seems to at least have it more visibly put together, and I think her time in Carol's house was good for her. That feels like that was the rehab. And now she's coming to the kingdom and knowing something must be done. Clearly you guys are in distress. Clearly my old friends are in distress. I can do something about it. I have to do something about it as a result. Morgan, meanwhile, is just like sharpening sticks on a porch and should not see another human being for a good little while.
Yeah.
But I think that Carol is like back to where she was, but in a more grounded, centered way, which I think is a really good accomplishment for the show. Wish it hadn't taken so long, but I think that where we have her right now is pretty
cool. Do you think that Morgan could get healed in the Carol cabin? Cherish the cabin, Morgan.
Yeah, does the cabin have healing properties? And by healing properties, I mean chili mac and cheese.
Do you think that Morgan is just going to be geeking out over there, just making spears to go and kill people? Or do you think that he might, you know, find some peace?
Yeah, maybe he's going to be building like a ton of spears and just like strategically hiding them in spots all around the area and leading up to the saviors. And he's just going to like lure them all out like a John Wick vengeance mission or something like that. That would be
something.
I don't know what's going to go on with Morgan, Rob. I don't know if Carol's Cabin is going to have healing properties for Morgan. This is something from Rob Craig, who writes in and says that Morgan sure had a visibility spike in this last episode, both literally in the form of his spear and his presence on the show. And he appears to be in full clear mode right now. Do you think we're getting ready to lose him? I have a feeling he's going to cross paths with some of these saviors real soon, and I'm wondering how that's going to play out. Rob, what's likelier to you? Do you think it's a likelier scenario that Morgan somehow finds, you know, some version of a new form of peace here in Carol's cabin, or do you think that he goes full clear and dies as a result?
You know, you and I had been talking for a while about that, you know, how long is Lenny James going to stay on The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
But this trajectory that he's on right now, I feel like it would be weird for his character to end up dying in this way without ultimately, like, we found him. He was a normal man. We watched him in the first six episodes of the show. He's really only in, like, the first, probably only, what, for the first one, or is he in the second one, too? There's not a lot of Morgan early on.
Yeah, it's just the first episode.
The specter of Morgan is out there. Like, Rick is, like, trying to reach him on the walkie-talkie. We see him again in clear, and he's a lunatic. He's lost it. Then we start to see him showing up in these, like, post-credit scenes in season five, and he's a new man. And when we get through everything where now he's a part of Alexandria, we get his whole backstory. He's at peace. He's at odds with Rick. But now to have him lose it again, it feels like a weird place to end that character without getting him back to a point where either he's able to say, you know what, I can do both things, where I can have peace and also be someone who protects my friends. But right now he's just really set off. I feel like it would be a weird place to lose him.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think what you described as Morgan realizing, I now have to do things to protect my people. Like, I have to kill again to protect the people that I love. I have to fight. I have to go to war. I think that that's a Morgan you have to see before he dies for a Morgan death to be satisfying right now. And granted, we just talked about how long it took, like, Carol to go through that big arc, but I don't think that it would have to take too long for Morgan to get there. I actually wouldn't be completely close to the idea that Morgan is, like, almost right there right now. By the end of the episode, that he does decide to stay, that he listens to Carol and doesn't just march off into the woods, where it's like, I don't know, it's like, you know, an alcoholic who has a relapse after a really long time away, and then, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the relapse, is like, I got to go back to rehab, I got to figure this out. It's like he literally brought himself back to a surrogate, not the Marty Funkhauser surrogate, of Eastman's cabin. Now that he's in this new cabin, he's like, I have to chill out here, I can't just...
Need to go.
I just can't run around killing people again, I really have to calm it down. So I think we could see that Morgan could get to that place fairly soon. I don't think that would have to take a while.
I think Morgan is a really important character on the show, though. I don't want to lose him.
I don't want to lose him either. I'm game to lose him if it's a good story, you know, and I think that that could be a good story. And I think that you could find, look, here's what I want for Morgan ultimately. You know, he has been with this show since the very, very beginning, since the very first episode. That's a guy who has a lot of emotional weight if you're a fan of The Walking Dead. I want that guy to have an ending that is peaceful. You know, I want him to have an ending that sees him coming to peace with what his life was, the mistakes he made, the murders that he has on his hands, all of the good that he's done. I want to see that all culminate into something where Morgan can be at peace with what he's done. And that might mean he dies. And that could mean that he dies in kind of a heroic way. And I would be good with that. Or it could mean that he just becomes an essential part of this community and keeps fighting and is on the show for a very long time. I'm good with that too. But in any event, like, I just want things to work out for this guy. I would hate for him to go full clear and for that to be his final note on the series. I do think that that would suck. And I think that you get the sense that Scott Gimple probably agrees with that. As you pointed out, Scott Gimple is the guy who's writing these Morgan episodes. He has a trajectory in mind for this character, and I don't feel like he would spend so much time, like, critically analyzing this character to just throw him to the wolves.
No, the wolves were a couple seasons ago, that Morgan killed one of them.
The wolves are gone. Right, we got to worry about the weevils now. I forgot. You know, like, I just don't think that he would just like toss Morgan into the trash.
You're right about the Scott Gimple. I feel like that he feels like that Morgan is some sort of an avatar for himself. I feel like that might be the character that he relates to the most. He really is very involved with all of his storylines. And one of the things that we were talking about on the show was how complicit was Morgan with Sir Richard's idea in that moment of when he ends up killing Sir Richard. And we talked about, was this all, and Chris Hardwick sort of like mentioned this a little bit, but Scott Gimple kind of shut it down. He said, you know, he killed a man with his bare hands. You know, don't sort of premeditate that. That's sort of something that happens out of rage. And so that, if we were thinking that Sir Richard and Morgan sort of talked this through, then that's not how Scott Gimple saw it. Now, he did sort of couch it and say, like, well, you know, it's whatever the audience thinks is right. So if you want to think that, you can think that.
Okay.
But he implied that it was not a case where Morgan and Sir Richard were on the same page in that moment.
All right. So you're busting this theory from Matthew Murphy, then, who says, I think I saw Morgan blinking Morse code to Sir Richard before he killed him.
Yeah, remember all the Morse code talk in the first half of the season?
How could I forget?
Yeah.
So no Morse code, no Moreskin code. Yeah,
Moreskin code.
Yeah, that sounded bad. It, you know, if you wrote it out, it wouldn't be so bad. But I think when you say it out loud, it just doesn't work. I don't think that there's anything premeditated here. I really don't. I feel like that's. I feel like it doesn't mean necessarily though that Morgan can't like rebound from this and be like, hey, we have to go to war. Like, I changed my mind about what I told you earlier, Ezekiel. We got to do something about it. But I just don't think that it was something he was doing in league with Sir Richard. You know, I think that he kind of just killed Sir Richard.
Right. It was not Sir Richard's plan. Okay, here's the new plan. You kill me in front of the saviors. That'll be my sacrifice, and then we can get back in their good graces.
Right.
Like, Morgan sort of just like improv that one.
Yeah, I think so. This is from Belinda on the topic of Sir Richard. I think it's a testament to how bad Richard's reputation is, even among the people in the kingdom, that Morgan, a relative newcomer, has garnered so much more trust and respect that they would all be like, okay, Morgan's strangling Richard. That must be for a good reason, since Richard's an idiot or a hothead. And Richard kind of was, considering all the harebrained plans we'd been privy to thus far. So I'm not too surprised by how ridiculously complex and dumb his plan was in the first place. What do you think about this? Do you think that that's a justification for why everybody who was standing there just watching Sir Richard die were just standing by? Do you think that that makes sense of all of this?
No, I don't know if, and like, Sir Richard wasn't depicted as a character that people in the kingdom hated. You know, he was
like a grumpy pants. Like, he was like the human personification of Grumpy Cat. But like, no, like, people love Grumpy Cat.
Right. He was basically like the Stanley of the office in the kingdom. But, you know, I just don't know how Morgan is so popular that he's able to just, you know, completely kill off with his bare hands Sir Richard. And nobody's going to say like, hey, Morgan, what's going on over there?
It was kind of amazing. You know, the more I think about it, that they're all just like, whoa. And everyone's just totally chill with it. Just, okay, Morgan, I guess you got to do what you got to do here.
Like, he's had enough, Morgan.
It's enough medicine. More medicine. This is from Spencer Y, who says, with Richard gone, it would be a shame if his hidden camper full of gasoline and glass jars didn't get put to good use in the upcoming war against the saviors. Do you think Daryl, once he finds out about Richard's death, will share the news about the hidden camper so Richard's supplies can go towards the war? What do you think? Is Daryl going to be, is he the guy who's going to let everyone know that Richard had like this secret stash of Molotov cocktail ingredients when they go to war against Negan?
I don't know. We have Daryl. He's up at the hilltop. Then he's got to come back to the kingdom and get all the stuff. I mean, we could do it in a montage, but that's a lot of back and forth for Daryl just to pick up those Molotov cocktails.
Yeah. Spencer also asks, will Daryl feel any guilt or remorse over Richard's death, especially since his final words to Richard about dying came to fruition? Kind of feel like Daryl's got to like work through the Glenn thing before he can feel anything about Sir Richard. Like, I don't think that he is going to start taking on Sir Richard until he's done taking on Glenn.
Right. And I don't think that Daryl is that introspective to think about that Sir Richard had this plan. Like, Morgan would have to, like, tell him the whole story about how his plan was that he was going to sacrifice himself. And then Daryl, like, oh, that's so weird because I remember that I said to him, why don't you go kill yourself? How about you? And I don't think that we're going to see that.
I don't think so either. I think that we've seen Richard's contributions to the show. I don't know how much more, like, the ghost of Sir Richard is going to be hanging over the kingdom in Alexandria and all of this. I feel like everything that we've gotten from that character, we're going to get. I think that his death does, like, galvanize Morgan, which galvanizes Carol, which galvanizes Ezekiel. So, you know, he's definitely put some stuff into action by dying. But I think that's going to be the extent of it. Like, I wouldn't even be surprised if we never heard Sir Richard's name on The Walking Dead again.
Yeah, I think he served his purpose. So, you know, he was a chess piece in the story, but now he is his watch is over, Josh.
His watch has ended. And you and I, Rob, as we said on the show on Sunday night, through the death of Sir Richard and the death of Sir Benjamin, we have both drawn on our death draft, and we're drawing dead. We're drawing even right now.
Yeah.
Do you want this?
Do you remember who else we have?
Yeah, I've got it. I've got it in front of me. I'm trying to do well this time. We never do well with this.
Okay.
You also have Dwight, and you also have Gregory, where I have Simon and Sherry. All still, I feel like, likely candidates on the board to die. I'm a little nervous that I won't be able to get a chance to see Sherry again here.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, you know, at least our Richard and Benjamin calls, those are pretty good.
I think that we could also very well have a scenario where Dwight and Sherry also die in the same episode.
Wow, that's definitely possible. And frankly, you could see Simon and Gregory dying in the same episode too, because Simon's always at the hilltop.
Yeah.
And then
I
what?
I think it'd be very interesting to see how this one's going. Wouldn't this be crazy if this one ended in like a 3-3 tie? How would we break the tie?
All right, here's how we break the tie. We're going to do it right now. We're gonna add to our teams. This is like a tiebreaker thing. We're just going to have one extra spot for both of us. Let's just pick one character right now. Now, who we think, given how close we are to the end of the season, who could die right now? Who is somebody in this cast that you think could die? And I could give you the first choice.
Boy, we talked so much about Morgan. Could he die? But I'm not going to end up going there with Morgan. And again, Sasha was the name that we took off the table from the time of the original death draft. So, boy, this is so tricky.
I've got my pick. I'm just hoping you don't take it.
You've got a good pick.
I've got a pick.
All right, you go first.
I go first?
Yeah.
Oh, is this a negotiation? Me, like, no. I take Jadis.
Jadis.
I'll take Jadis. Jadis Pinkett Smith. I'm going to say.
Oh, they were hyping up Jadis so much on The Talking Dead, though, that I can't imagine.
For the sake of all mankind, I'm going to put it out there that Jadis is not going to survive.
Okay, that's a good one. Who would we end up losing? Who would be an acceptable loss? I mean, I'm trying to think about anybody from Alexandria. Other than Tobin and Father Gabriel, I don't even know who's at Alexandria.
Is Tobin even still on the show? I don't remember the last time I saw Tobin.
Tobin is still alive.
Okay.
Let me go with Tobin because he would be like the one person that we could lose.
Oh,
that would be
no,
like an
Tobin.
Acceptable loss.
Acceptable loss? That would be terrible if we lost Tobin. But I feel like if we're looking at like Dwight and Sherry could go in the same episode and Simon and Gregory could go in the same episode. Like I feel like the Tobin and Jadis deaths would at least be going on in different episodes. So this feels like a good tiebreaker in the worst case scenario.
Yeah. And I thought I had a backup pick. I think it might be Jerry.
Jerry, oh God, why are you putting that out there?
Jerry is like the type of person that like always ends up dying in The Walking Dead. It's like not the main guy, but like the associate of the main guy that the main guy can like feel bad about.
I already regret not picking either Jared or Gavin.
Yeah, okay, that would be good too.
Although you and I could both take a Jared or a Gavin because they would die in the same episode, so we could just keep the status quo.
Yeah, be even. Okay, so Josh, let's see how this all plays out. Looks like we're going to be back to the hilltop, going to go see what's going on with Rosita and with Sasha. Let's see if Maggie finds out about this plan. Very light Maggie half season so far.
So far, but I mean, mean, with the way that these episodes are structured, like next week we'll get, you know, certainly more Maggie than you could ask for, Rob.
Yeah, so we'll see what's going on with her. Now, Sunday night, I will be on my way to New York. So you and Alex Kidwell will be going on without me, much like we'll have to go on without Sir Richard and Benjamin.
You guys, my God.
But the difference is I'll be back the following week.
Yeah, the difference is you have not succumbed to a gunshot to the leg, I hope.
No, hopefully. I mean, hopefully not.
I mean, that'd be terrible news.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Alex and I will hold it down. We'll have a great podcast for you guys.
Okay, so looking forward to hearing how that all works out. Of course, you can follow Josh on Twitter. He is at Round Howard. I'm at Rob Cesternino, and very excited to see how the rest of this Walking Dead season plays out. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.